First item on the agenda is to do a roll call. So, you want to name off names? Or just go around the table? I'll go around the table. All right. David Miller.
Rick Ziegenfuss.
Buddy Roberts.
Charles MacArthur.
Brian Caperton.
Randy Hayes.
And our audience is...
Frank Miller, Southwest District, MoDOT.
Christopher Kinzel from HDR.
Travis Heyer from HDR.
Next item is approval of minutes. I glanced at him. I think we might have spelled Kirk Duranis' name wrong. Did anybody catch that? Or maybe it's Andrew Siler. That's what it was. Second paragraph on the second page. I think there's an extra letter in there, but I'm not real sure how Andrew spelled his name. It's S-E-I-L-E-R.
Yes.
Yeah. There's an extra A in Siler.
Down there on under old business, second sentence, that should be your name in there. You responded to the water line broke on the Gretna Road.
Oh, so instead of Randy responded, it's David
responded.
Yeah,
you actually responded to that.
Any other corrections?
I would propose we accept the minutes as amended.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Did everybody get the little agenda? I guess you did. Okay. The first item is transportation priority matrix. And talk to the consultants, so... Sure, you want to come on up?
Yeah, you
want to bring me to go over this. You can grab one of those chairs there if you want.
All right.
Here is okay. I think you all received, well, those of you who have email, received an email from us, and I think some received some things hard copy. What we've done since then is actually compressed some of the stuff we sent into, hopefully, it's more compressed. I won't say it's simpler to understand, but it's a little more compressed. Pass that over. Tom Ryan has been working with the folks on this priority matrix, and I'm Christopher Kinzel. I'm a colleague of his from HDR. Unfortunately, some of you may or may not know, Tom's no longer with HDR, so I'm helping out on this this activity. So, again, I'm Christopher Kinzel. I'm up in the Kansas City office of HDR, transportation planner slash traffic engineer.
Christopher, can you spell your last name for us?
Yeah, K-I-N-Z-E-L.
Thank you.
Sure. And today, I guess, is sort of a little bit, I actually talked to Chairman Miller the other day about this, and I think it's a little bit of maybe getting caught up on both sides. I think with Tom not being involved in the process anymore, and also with sort of Frank Preston not being involved in the process, there's been a couple loose ends that we might want to talk about and then try to move forward on. So did everyone get a copy of this first handout? Basically, this is just a compression of the categories that this committee has come up with by which you'll will weigh different projects. And so there's, on the left, we have these big categories of congestion relief, economic competitiveness, mobility, quality of communities, access to opportunity, environmental protection, safety, and taking care of the system. And each of those were given a weight for both for major and minor projects. So, and then each of those are divided up into subcategories, which are then given more weights. And the idea is that going forward, you can apply these to each project that we look at. We can come back to that in a second. I'm going to give one other handout here. And basically what this is we sent four or five different spreadsheets for different projects. It was a lot to absorb. This is essentially a compression of those onto one sheet. It's not very pretty, but but it puts everything in one place, and it sort of talks to the point of what all these criteria look at when you start evaluating projects. It's my understanding that the committee working with Frank had put together a list of three projects per district.
We originally were going to do ten per district, and then we scaled it back to, I think, three per district, so we, as a kind of a test, am I remembering that right?
And we had, I think that's a place where the loop hasn't closed. I think when Frank left, I'm not sure that list, the list didn't make it to HDR, and so if that list was all compiled into one place. So one of the things we need to talk about is just how to get that list back and get it into this format. But this is sort of the matrix, a matrix format of these priorities, or of these, how you look at these projects. We've listed five projects that folks had started working on here, and just sort of are showing how you go through under this blue inputs area. You know, here's all the things under these different categories. Congestion relief is, you know, what's the level of service and how much traffic does the facility carry? Economic competitiveness has several categories. Each one of those has several categories that you then need to rate each project by. And so on the spreadsheets we had sent before, basically that's all that compressed. Each one was for a separate project. Now each project on this page I handed out is just a separate line. And then as you go under, the right side is where you kind of score all these things, and that comes out of the ratings that you develop, basically taking these inputs, this is how they translate into scoring. And it's preliminary because we need to collect crash data. There's still some data in here that needs to be collected. And so these numbers aren't even correct at this point. It's just showing you the tool and how you could use it and begin to apply it to projects. And from here, you know, it takes a bit of effort from here to, if we were going to get those 21 projects and do the analysis required to rank them, that may be something either the county wants to do or have a consultant do. But that's kind of, we've brought it to this step for you, and then from here, it's the next step is up to this committee what you want to do with it. I will say that as you look, there's a lot of numbers on this page, and as you look at it, there are some things that when you actually see them applied, they kind of jump out as, okay, it was good when we started this, we wanted to be somewhat compatible with MoDOT's criteria for how they rank projects statewide. There's some of these as you look at them that maybe we may want to consider shrinking the categories or refine the categories a little bit, because as you look at them, for example, under economic competitiveness, things like, is this a strategic corridor or does it support regional economic opportunities? Those are great categories, because if you've got a project that's going to open up for development or support economic development or those kinds of things. But when you look at some of these things about poverty and unemployment levels, usually those statistics, you know, when you're looking at the whole state, it may make a difference. When you're looking at the county, those kinds of fine-grained things, we're probably going to end up answering the same thing to almost every question, just because of the way you collect data on that kind of thing. So we might suggest that some categories like that, you know, we might want to refine. I didn't want to get into too much detail on that. If the committee wants to talk more about that, we can certainly do that. But there's data that we need to be collected on each of these. You'd have to get the traffic volumes. You have to get the safety data. Some of the other items are fairly easy to fill in because there's the yes-no kinds of questions. Some of them are subjective. Some of them are a little more objective. But the more categories you have, the more questions you have to answer for each project. So this is the direction this is heading. Wanted to hear the committee's thoughts on where you want to go from here, and if you have any questions on what I'm showing you today.
All right. The one thing Christopher told me, I asked him, because I've been a little confused myself, how we came to have Tom Ryan helping us and HDR, and we haven't been paying them. They've just kind of been doing it for free, I think.
That's correct.
And we talked about the amount of data that's missing here. I know we got Great River working on cost because of the TEEP program to come with cost estimates. That'll fill in one of the, well, actually, the cost wasn't even
cost. Not showing on here, but we should.
But what's your thoughts? Do we need to hire HDR to fill us in? Is there going to be a new Frank Preston that has some time to work on it? I don't know.
It's a good question. We asked, you know, we asked about the cost, and he said that HDR was doing it because they helped once if they got this, then other counties would pay for it.
Okay, so he was just doing it just for free?
He was doing it for free because it looked like business, new business for HDR if they, we could work this out as Tane County. That was his answer for that, that time. But now I think, you know, when you, you go on, we're going to have somebody more dedicated to both Tane and HDR. That means you might have to pay.
Randy, what do you see? I mean, I have kind of a feeling about whether the county's anxious to get a new road and bridge administrator on board. Where are you, what are you thinking the atmosphere is there?
At this point in time, I know they're probably going to review applications. They've been taking applications for that position, so I'm sure there's going to be another person filling that position. As far as how much role they'll play, I'm sure he'll be taking over. As far as this, how you want to do that, I'm not sure who it'll be. Or
you don't have a timeline or any of that kind of stuff. No. Have you applied?
No.
Okay. So we know it's not you. All right. So we're not sure who it is, but we know who it's not. Okay. Given that information, I think this is a pretty important part of what we're doing. And so I would opt to somehow or another get a more dedicated effort on this that we can kind of make sure that it goes forward. Now, what form that takes, I guess I'd be open to that. But I think we should actually continue to get a product someday of what we're doing.
You know, I'm not opposed to looking into another individual, but I don't want another Frank Preston. I don't want lip service. I want to see results. And to me, if it's HDR person, that's fine. I think we need some parameters out there as to what it's going to cost us first before we pull the trigger.
In the funds the county commission set aside, they gave us some money. We took part of that to do the match, and there's a little pot left, right?
Supposedly.
It wasn't in the budget, but it's in the budget.
That's correct.
Do we have, and Randy, you may know the answer to this, do we have any discretionary level at county of saying if it's below $5,000, we can go ahead and contract? If it's above, we have to do bids? Or are you aware of anything like that?
Well, our parameters, if anything over $4,500, we have to bid.
Okay, and I think that's a kind of thing. So if we get a scope of this project that's going to be larger than $4,500, I think county policy would probably say we have to go out for bids. If it's something that could be done for less than that, then I would think that we could engage somebody to continue if they're working on it or whatever.
I assume the county hires engineers with proposals and not bids, I would guess.
Well, and that could be. And
I don't know.
You guys are engineers. Yeah. Do they have just your qualifications on?
They just do based on qualifications.
So they have your qualifications on record all the time, and so they've pre-approved, and if we select from that group, Travis, you kind of...
Well, they have all the qualifications.
Our tail's going to be in the crack, not yours.
I mean, they do, you know, RFPs and RFQs, but it's not a fee-based selection.
All right, that's good. And Christopher, you said it real... said it, some of the data that we need is the scratch information, and if we had a gun-ho Frank Preston on board, that staff person could do it, but without some of the time to spend doing it, I think we're going to have a consultant to gather that data, right?
And I think we're, at least initially, I'm all right with just the Highway Patrol report, rather than having for us to go through and scan sheriff's records and local police records and all that jazz. I think just use the highway patrol.
It depends on, as long as the facility is, you know, patrolled by the highway patrol. I mean, if it's a, you know, if it's a local, under local jurisdiction, then we might have to get the data from the local folks. But it depends on how that gets reported up.
The patrol gathers all the reports for cities and counties, too.
Anybody so uses the uniform crime reporting system
okay.
reports it, so.
We work with the, we work with MoDOT, and we got a lot of that information.
We can get you the ones in the state roads, but not the local roads, but they are all centrally gathered.
Sure.
And MoDOT has that central database. And like I said, we've got all that. I mean, it's available to them.
So I guess my input on this is we need to move forward with this report. Now, what direction, I guess?
I would make the motion that we spend up to $4,500 on an individual to compile this information for HDR.
I wouldn't mind getting with HDR and talking about a scope and seeing what kind of costs we were looking at and then reporting back to you all or the county commission, whether it's a $4,500 effort or a $20,000 effort.
Okay. These things can get large, so and part of it depends on you know, how detailed we're going to take this. If there's some things, some categories we sort of refine out of this and that kind of thing.
And I think that you've got a good point there. I think that But again, we're not necessarily, all of us aren't subject matter experts on each of these categories. We're looking for some kind of a recommendation to pare those down into a little simpler form, rather than, obviously, that poverty information is going to be, is collected countywide. So it's going to be the same for every one of our projects. It's all going to be the same. So it won't discriminate anything. It will just be over and over again. I see some of those of the values are the same every time. We just need to go through those that are going to wind up not helping us sort projects and get rid of them. So I think at least part of what you need to do is say, we're going to recommend that you take these 30 categories and move them down into 20, or move them down into whatever that smaller form does. I think this format serves better, everybody, to see you have all your sheets, and sometimes that's a little difficult to keep flipping back and forth to see how this one stacks up with that one. When you get them like this, it's a lot more user-friendly.
Yep.
Oh, Brian, you have any thoughts?
We need to proceed, I think. Definitely.
We'd be happy to, if you were saying, Chairman North, if you were saying that you know, we could look at what a scope would take, and then it may be that you can get to a certain point for under $4,500, and then there's some other things that might be nice to have or might want to proceed down the road. But I'm sure we can pull something together that says, you know, here's what it would take to get there.
We should be able to know up front what it's
right.
going to run. You can break it down, and, you know, so.
One of the things that makes this a little bit difficult is, I would recommend it'd be good to try to recover that list of the 21 projects, because depending on, I know the cost estimates are being done by others, but is it for that 21 projects that they're being done? Or I guess we want to make sure exactly if you have to answer a question on a 10-mile project versus an intersection. There's a different magnitude of effort that goes into that. If you have to check, you know, are we avoiding historical impacts, or, you know, what is the crash rate on a 10-mile facility as opposed to a, that's an exaggeration of the length, but as opposed to an intersection, there's more effort involved. So if we had all lengthy facilities that we're going to be looking at, it might be a different magnitude. So it'd be good for us, I think, to get that list as a starting point of giving you, responding back to you with a scope.
But we have the list, don't we?
We probably each have our own.
I was trying to pull something out here. I've got bits and pieces of different ones, but I don't have everybody's.
I don't have that. I think I might have everybody's. I don't know if I can find it in a short time.
I'm just looking through some notes and stuff that was jotted down. Some of Frank's notes, but
it's got District 1, 6 yeah. projects, District 2, 5 projects, 3, 5 projects, 4, 5 projects, yeah. 6, 6, we have freeway, 10 projects, and District 7's One, two, three, four. Yeah, five and seven are missing.
Yeah, well, those are probably the ones. What section do you have? Well, remember, we made presentations. And I know you didn't make a presentation. But, so it may be the ones where we made the presentations. You know.
I got maps of number six. So that must be me.
Let's all figure out what district where we are.
Well, let's see. We've got, buddy, you look like you're three.
Okay. Oh, okay.
There's three in there then?
I've got three.
Three is on this list.
Okay, because I turned mine in. I just didn't make the presentation.
You just didn't make the presentation yet.
Five is Brian Spence's in the north half of Branson.
Okay. And actually, I think Jim Youngblood and I split, and I turned out to be one, and he turned out to be seven.
And then so maybe his seven got lost in the shuffle.
Could be.
I can get a hold of Brian, number five, and see if I can get his list from him.
Can I see that list for a second? Because he has specifically in the term. Okay. So some of these talk about just roads and not, you know, not the from where to where kind of thing. That would be another useful thing.
Just areas. You know, I have this list, which is 1, 2, 3, 4, and 6. Do you have that?
Yeah, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
1, 2, 3, 4, and 6. Yep.
And then I have. I can dig it out, but each one of these, here's 6, and here's 3.
Used to create
this. More information. There's just more information on the same thing.
So I guess what Ray was working on last night.
Take a look at that and see if that won't help you.
We don't have the information.
You don't have the direction.
But we're willing to be offered for each one of those projects.
So we just need the list.
Christopher, check out those minutes. I think that has all seven reports.
Is this an extra copy or
no? No,
we can get you an extra copy.
Okay. Yeah. Not an extra copy.
What you do is get this list and then get a map and see if we can put some locations on it.
Okay.
Brian Spence's District 5 says turn lane at Table Rock Asphalt, Buena Vista. I know what he's talking about. He's talking about the one intersection with that 248 there. It doesn't say that.
So. Yeah, so there might be a few little specifics there.
Copies of that.
You had this? Did you have this?
Yeah, that was, yeah.
That's what you just had?
Yeah.
And the factors like poverty, greater income, that is broken down by census tract. And there's a website called MoDOT-SEIR, Socioeconomic Indicator Resource.info, that we have that you can actually query some of the MoDOT routes, but you can also get in there and draw corridors, and it will pull up what the socioeconomic information is for that corridor. So either if you have an existing local corridor, you can just, it's meant for new corridors, but if you have an existing local corridor, you can draw it on there. And should be able to generate some numbers for you in the socioeconomic factors.
I guess just the question is, will there be enough range within the county?
The track level there will be, since it's track level for things like income and poverty, I think that the unemployment is countywide though, so you don't necessarily get any discernment there, but you can get definitely some income for this. But there's a whole host of factors that you can look at that you could use for our time.
As far as the location of the projects, I mean, did you guys mark them on your maps before the projects were by district? No, you just did it by list.
Yeah.
Do you think that we can work with Randy and get those on? I mean, if Randy can tell us where they're at, we can get them incorporated on this master map that you guys are using to show your district boundaries and the project locations, and then from that we can let's pull that accident data for those specific projects, so you guys can put that into the matrix. And then the other thing, we can take MoDOT counts and the county traffic counts and demonstrate that type of information as well. So I think if we work together, we can, you know, get the data and the facts that we're looking for. But I think the key is going back and being able to locate those on the map.
Yeah. Christopher's going to need it, not being familiar with the room. But your motion was to move forward with HDR for up to $4,500, right?
Not necessarily with HDR, just to move forward.
Yeah.
You know, if HDR wants to do it for that dollar amount, or up to that dollar amount, fine.
All right. And then, see, so you made the motion, and I said that I'd be glad to work with them and see if I come up with a scope and report back to y'all. So, does someone want to second that motion?
I'm a little confused about what we're doing here. Either we're moving forward or we're scoping.
Yes.
I want to second. I'll have to wait and see what happens.
I think we can't move forward until we figure out what the scope is.
And I think that's true. So I think the first step would be to go out for a scope. You're going to work on a scope of this.
Yeah. And I guess if I came back and said like, it's 20,000 or it's 1,000, then...
Then we move forward. Then or not. Forward.
So we shoot towards his direction.
Okay.
I'm going to second now.
I'll second.
And I'm trying to report back to you by email or mail, and so I'm trying to speed things up a little bit.
Thank you.
Read it.
Move forward with the scope. You want more than that on there?
And just... to spend up to $4,500 if necessary.
Would the goal be to have that, have you be able to report back to this body at the next meeting?
Or sooner, and we may have to go to the county process for getting somebody under contract. Yeah. So I don't think we'll, at the next meeting we'll come back with this spreadsheet completed with 21 projects.
A little bit of this is, for example, on Jim Inslee, he's got Iowa Colony Road. Well, Iowa Colony Road, Randy's already got being done. So it's almost, is it done? It might even
be. It will be completed probably within a month and a half.
In the flooded area?
No.
Okay. There was some water problems up the hill going.
Yeah, this is on the 165 end.
Yeah.
Basically resurfacing and widening.
From the 165 down?
Down to where we got good pavement.
Okay.
We're just getting a consistent 20-foot width.
Okay.
Because that part that was flooded actually hasn't been all that long since it was redone, right? That lower part of
right. That was one of our first projects, I think, in 04, installing stormwater improvements there in the park along where Trot Hollow Lodge in that area. Now, as far as the part that floods like Foggy River and that area, I mean, that's a whole different.
Okay.
And on my end of that, there's part of that in District 1. The College of the Ozarks is prepared to donate a bunch of right-of-way for a realignment. So they're willing to... Dr. Keeter just came to me this 2 weeks ago again, gave me a new updated map because there was like... when I proposed it, there were three parcels they didn't own, and they have now purchased those parcels. So they have all of that, and they're willing to donate new right-of-way to realign Acacia Club Road to where they're down at the bottom. There's kind of an S-curve when you get down to the bottom that it would take that out of there. So, I don't know. But I guess my point about that was some of these projects... generally, there's a certain number and all this and that, but if you're going to refine each one of them to a cost, we need to make sure that they're a right project and they're not already completed or in there. The other thing that we've done is, like, for example, T Highway doesn't show up in here because it's under construction. We talked about Business 65 and St. James Street again doesn't show up in here because it's got another funding route. I just want to make sure that we don't lose sight of some of those priorities. The other thing that comes to mind is, depending on what happens here, but the racetrack stuff may enter into some kind of a priority. It may not be that we fund it or anything like that, but it may wind up being in a priority if you put it into this kind of a matrix.
Down the road.
Down the road.
Yeah.
So I guess that, and those are ones that I know of in my area. I think there are probably others I just don't know about. So,
call for the vote, baby.
Okay. No further discussion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Pose the same sign. Okay, the motion passes. And I will report when I find out.
Contact.
Yes.
Yeah, we're very interested in helping out, so.
Yeah, I'm going to scout a little bit. Next item on our agenda was transportation projects, and I think that's our general catch-all category that we use to talk about Key Highway that's under construction and East-West Corridor and whatever else it is. That's one. Anyone have any specific information you want to talk about on the transportation projects on our agenda?
Rick probably does on the racetrack.
Well, our next item down
they're
is
make a presentation,
that's coming up.
Okay.
They'll take care of that.
Okay.
And I think I just went over my projects about 30 seconds ago.
That's fine.
Next item is the BUDOS draft program of 2012-2016. Frank, is it you?
Yeah, I passed out a handout. It says summary 2012-2016 draft scope. That's the interstate-wide transportation improvement program. I gave you a summary that's the interstate of maintaining counties. And so now I thought maybe the Stone County projects that are profile ones would be of interest to this group also. I guess I need to preface this. Many of you know this, but MoDOT has reorganized, and we've gone from 10 districts down to 7. The district that you were in was District 8. The district that you are now in is Southwest. And we are still headquartered out of Springfield, but the boundaries shifted slightly. Those of you that participated in our rural planning process where we got together and picked out the projects in our District 8 area beyond Springfield, which Springfield gets its own funding, that area has changed somewhat. Springfield still gets its own funding for Springfield, Nixa, Ozark, Republic, et cetera. But our what we call our rural area has expanded to include Joplin, Nevada, Clinton, Neosho, Carthage, Monette. And so it's a much larger area competing for, be a little bit more funds, but overall there still won't be enough funds to go around and address everybody's issues. We'll be focused really on taking care of the system. And that means working on keeping our roads smooth, keeping the bridges in good condition. So that's where we're kind of headed looking forward. However, for our draft STIP, let me go back again. Part of this reorganization revolved around a lot of downsizing. We're eliminating 1,200 positions. We're closing maintenance buildings. We're closing 3 district offices. We're closing construction offices. And we're taking that savings and we're putting it back into our program. So we were able to add some projects this year, nothing real dramatic, but little projects in lots of places that I think will be a good impact, have that safety emphasis to them. And so that's how we're able to kind of get to this point. We're able to go ahead and do some things that in the STIP to help out. You see the projects listed here, but for our former District 8 area, we programmed $228 million inflated for projects in the 12 to 16 program. Of that, $147 million is rural, and $81 million is the urban part of our district. Some of the high-profile taking care of the system projects, the Route 76 Bull Shoals Bridge in Forsyth, I know you're all very familiar with this. We do not know for sure what we're doing with the bridge yet, because we have to replace the superstructure. That's the big metal truss that you see on the bridge. If you have to take that apart, you have to close the bridge to do that, and that's why we've said we think we'll have to close the bridge. We are not completely sure. The project is programmed for 2014. Chazik is the project manager. I said, we have a situation, we have a bridge, we need to close the Chaz, we better start talking to the community now about it, if you need to do this or not. But that is on the program. We've got to do something about the bridge. We also are looking at the Route 13 bridge in Stone County over Table Rock, and that one's just a deck replacement. We don't have to get to the middle of the bridge, so we think we can do that and keep the bridge open. That's the difference between the two bridges, but they're both pretty significant projects. Route 65 resurfacing from Route EE, that's actually up by Highlandville, down to Route 465, the high road. It's getting a little rough, so we resurface that and work on two of the bridges there, too.
That may have started already, but
you know, they're doing work there, and I was like, what are they doing? I think that's our, we're working on the ramps this year, and I think we have a, we also have an on-call project where if we have a bad piece of pavement somewhere, we have them go out and fix it now. So I saw some right there that I was kind of worrying about myself.
1665, yeah.
Yeah. And then wanted to share, we received a lot of open container money, and this is mainly going over in Stone County, but to do the rumble stripes and little pieces of basically 2 foot shoulders on those roads where we could put them in the traffic. The crash data is backing that. So we were able to get a lot of that in this area. And probably moving forward as we do more work in Taney County, we'll have some in this area also.
The open container, does that mean money comes from?
Sorry. there's a penalty where we don't have an open container law in Missouri. So Congress has said, well, if you don't have this law, then you have to spend X amount of your federal highway dollars on safety. So we call it our open container money, and we have to use it on rumble stripes instead of just throwing it in the pot to do whatever we want with it. So.
But if Missouri would pass the law, then that money would, then you could use it for whatever you want.
Right. So actually, it probably end up being used for the same thing. So anyway, one safety project is Route 65 on Rochester Road. That's right down almost by the county, state line. We have a crash problem there. We're not completely sure we're going to do to address that crash problem, but it might be a signal there.
Is that the convenience store?
Yes.
Yeah. Is that right?
Yeah.
A lot of crashes there.
Yeah, high severity. And this is based on information from our traffic engineers. So we basically are going to do something to improve safety at that intersection. Some regional projects on Route 160 going from Nixa to north of Reed Spring, looking at some various turn lanes at some intersections there. Most of those are in Christian County, actually, but the Spokane area has had a high-profile intersection that really had some crashes, and so that's the first one we'll be looking at. Realignment of Route 76, just west of the high road, between Route 265 and the high road. When we look at the priorities in our area in the district, the Route 76 between Grayson and Branson West comes up as a priority. And so we couldn't do the whole thing, so the area that looked like it would be feasible, and Stone County has actually done some work to scope this, is the little piece, there's a curve there to straighten out between the high road and 265. That curve is showing up on our crash list also. So we had, you know, kind of two reasons to look at doing that.
We're very thankful that you're defining that as Route 76 rather than the high road.
Yeah, that piece is
once
actually,
that was defined as the high road, buddy, you might have been involved with that. We came back from one of those prioritization things said we were putting money in the high road. My tail feathers didn't cool off for 3 months. People were on this. I'm glad you redefined that.
That piece actually is 76, but it's all part of that corridor.
And the high road just keep calling it this. Yeah. Call it the high road.
Another series of minor trailing improvements on Route 160 in the Forsyth, Merriam Woods area. We're talking to the city of Forsyth now about some potential locations. We have, we'll probably get to do two or three turn lanes through there. And plus, depending on what exactly we do at Route F, we at one time looked at a roundabout there and then looking at the traffic operations and talking with our traffic engineers. The other idea was, well, what if we just move the stop sign and kind of widen out some pavement, and it might address some of the issue, because the main movement is from 160 to F to go into Branson. It's not to stay on 160. So you just kind of treat that as the through corridor and have the people that are on the 160 west leg of it stop instead. So that can be done pretty cheaply. But we have an earmark from Congresswoman Emerson for the corridor, so we wanted to use up the rest of that and put a little bit more money on it, and that's why we're looking at other intersections we can work with in that whole area. So if you guys have any thoughts on that, we'd entertain that too, about places where we might look at some turn lanes on that whole corridor. And the only thing I think, of course, the city of Forsyth has moved so far is the 176 intersection and 160 going into Broadway Beach is one possibility. And so we'll be looking at that again in the future. We programmed, and this is not news, the St. James Street and Business 65 intersection at Hollister. that's coming up, as well as 76 and Route T. And both of those are cost shares, one with Hollister, one with King County. And then in the last year of the STIP, one of the intersections that has been on Signal Warrant's list for a while and has never had anything done with it is the East Outer Road at Route F, which would be near 65. There's the apartment complex behind there in the outer road, and a lot of left turners out of that intersection. So we programmed the signal for that intersection. And then we have, we were able to get some statewide transportation enhancement funds for Branson. And Branson, David called up and said they were interested in doing some sidewalk work in Branson. I said, well, let's see if we can get some enhancement funds. And shortly after that, they had a request for areas of the state that went to do some enhancement work, which are their sidewalks, trails, and that kind of thing. And so we presented that Branson was willing to match it, and we were successful in getting some money to do that. We have a meeting this week to talk about what exactly we're going to do. And they're, but we're looking at the sidewalk improvements, ADA improvements in the city of Branson. So those are highlights. What's not on here, there's some more minor routes resurfacing, like we're looking at Route 160 from 76 here in Forsyth out east into Ozark County. Piece of Route 165, Route 248 in Brigetson. There's some other routes I'm sure I'm forgetting. And then also some drainage improvements on Route 76 at Lakeshore Drive. There's a pretty steep ditch there that emergency responders have said that. I think the Sheriff's Department said that we have a lot of people running off of that. We're going to cover that ditch up. Some people run off. They're not going to be going into it.
Hitting the bluff.
Yeah, hitting the bluff. Probably guardrail there. But it's been kind of a safety issue and drainage issue I wanted to address.
Frank, the Bullshill Bridge.
Yeah.
Is there any consideration being put into this for a complete new bridge below the one, the existing one there?
Yes. The thing is that it's a major bridge, and we are using our district funds to pay for that. I think we programmed $7 million, and that's really a huge project for us right now. So to do a new bridge, you know, we would look at that, but we'd have to factor in the cost of that.
Okay. Well, if you do consider that, I would assume you'll bring the bridge on the Shadowrock end down to where it's going to that intersection in the Shadowrock Lodge.
Well, one of the issues we have there is that there's a park. Anytime we get anywhere near a park, we run into a lot of trouble getting approval to do that. There's a federal law that protects parks. It doesn't matter who the park belongs to, it can be a private park, but it really restricts you on taking any park.
But it's underwater.
Yeah, that doesn't matter. It's a water park. So that is a constraint on where it could go. But the main constraint on the idea or the concept of second bridge is driven by cost. And so if we can, you know, in terms of trying to keep all our bridges across the state maintained, if we can maintain this one at a lesser cost by doing something less extensive with it, you know, that's what we have to do as opposed to just building a brand new one.
Without closing it?
Well, that's just it. I mean, you have to close it to fix it.
So, I heard that you were considering a pontoon bridge.
I think at this point we'll consider any idea that's viable. So we know it's a huge impact on the community, but we know we have to close it, so it's kind of like, what can we do? You know, if you guys have any ideas for how we can do something cheaply, you know, I'm sure we'd listen to it.
Well, there's one idea with the water and banks, but that throws that idea completely out whenever it's flooded 20 feet in the park.
Yeah.
20 feet deep, and you think, oh, my gosh, where do you go with everything then?
Well, we talked about that with the idea of a ferry, too, is that if the lake level changes a lot, then your ferry points change, too. And
yes, and so does the current. Mm-hmm.
You have to figure in the cost of impact on the community, like length of detour and fuel in the car. Is that even a factor in the discussion?
You know, I think it is on the periphery of the discussion, but we definitely talked about, you know, you know, the school district is divided by this bridge, the fire district is, the city is, you know, we had another bridge where it just worked out, the school district boundary was there, and you know, it's okay, we're not going to have to worry about school buses or that kind of thing, but that's not the case with this one. So, I mean, we know we're having this huge impact, and We don't, and there's no good way around. And the other way around is going through Branson, basically. There's no other good connection. So there's not a connection to the east. Welcome to Taney County. So,
how many cars an hour can a ferry carry?
I don't know. I think it depends on the ferry. And, you know, we can't put a huge ship out there. So that's why we're just not sure what we're going to do.
I can't see one carrying all that traffic.
Highway 125 ferry, 7 cars an hour. That's what they average. Hell, hell. That'd be good. One school bus. Unless the kids are home free for the day. Nah, ferry won't work.
No.
They're going to have to. I'm going to have to do something. Go to the state for emergency funds or to build a new bridge. Or you just, I don't see how you can.
Yeah, we went through this before in this area, and it's really tough to find the funds to do that.
Well, it will be closed, what, 6 months probably, at least?
That I don't know.
I'll guarantee you if they close that bridge, I wish that they had got the funds somehow. Politically, that's not good. I don't see how you possibly could survive that, but maybe I'm wrong.
But I mean, if we don't do anything with it eventually, it will close.
Yes, but that's not an answer.
Is that metal rusting? I mean, is that...
Yeah, I don't know the details of what the deterioration is. But I know, I talked with our bridge engineer recently about it. He thinks we might need something to kind of pull it together a little bit longer so we can delay the bigger project, but we just need to look at it more and figure out what the options are. And remember, really, we're trying to fix the Table Rock Bridge and the Bull Shoals Bridge. And, and the thing is, between that, those two, it's, you know, $12, $13 million. The cost for, if we had to do this over at Table Rock, the cost for new bridge over there was estimated to be $100 million. and we're getting to, with funding projections in 17, well, I haven't seen for our new district boundary, but it looked like that. We're talking about statewide having $250 million to spend for the whole state. Because we're getting to the point where we're having problems matching federal funds, assuming there aren't any federal funds there, because the federal trust fund for the gas tax is not able to keep up with what was promised to states either, because gas tax revenue is down. That's why I have news. I'm not calling it good news.
Yeah, where's the good news?
We have some good little projects in the state, but long-term funding does not look good right now, anyway. But, you know, we'll keep talking with the community about this bridge, and we don't want to close it. We don't want to have to put a burden on the community either. We're sort of stuck between a rock and a hard place, but we need to take care of the bridge and fix it. But what do you do to address the connectivity issue? Definitely recognize there's a problem there. And it takes some creativity to figure it out.
I wonder, you know, if we as the Transportation Advisory Board, if we could bring any weight to our state legislatures about that bridge. And
we don't have time to do it.
We could. You know, it's our voice, and also
haven't hit that rainy day fund.
Yeah, and
if the disaster slow down,
I don't know. I think we ought to think about at least a letter, or maybe I don't know how everybody feels about that, but it's just a suggestion to think about.
If we do a letter, we need to have some kind of a plan. Mm-hmm. If we just say, you know, closing that bridge is really a non-option. That won't go anywhere. But if we say, look, we would like to put this pot of money together, that pot of money together, we'd like that to influence.
To build a new, I'd say build a new bridge.
Well, and I'm big, and you know that because of the Branson situation between Branson and Oscar. When you've got multiple choices, then you never face this again. But if you only have a single bridge and we build a new bridge, we'll face it again. Sooner or later, because one bridge, one disaster knocks out one bridge. You got two bridges, one goes down, you still have a way. And that's kind of, and even, you know, it doesn't matter.
I wonder, Charles, since we're an advisory board, if we write a letter, have the county send a letter, and we send a support letter, since we're kind of advising the county commission. I don't know if that's a more politically correct way to do it.
But, and then when you build a new bridge right beside the old bridge, and then you just switch traffic over, rehab the old bridge. Now, this, it may not all happen in one project, but, and I'm going to guarantee you, if we got to come up with $15 million, it's going to be as hard to come up with 10 as it is 15, I believe. Once we can find somebody that can find a way to get this done, rehabbing the old bridge and doing a new bridge, I really believe that if that's what we got to do. Can this one, you're not an engineer, so it doesn't matter, but it may not be the old iron superstructure that's on it right now.
It doesn't have to be.
No, it could just be new girders and maybe the same piers.
Yeah, I think it's the metal truss to go away.
Yeah.
The replacement.
And the refurbishing of the old one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the new bridge could be easily built.
Keep a spade or something like cool.
For someone that's coped with pontoon bridges for a long time, they don't work and they don't last. They're really a maintenance 24/7. You have to have people out there maintaining them or they move. They do all kinds of things. Plus, they're really not good for your vehicles when you go across them. It doesn't matter what they tell you. You don't allow your cars to last for a long time.
Well, any other questions for Frank? I guess there's a report, so we don't need any motion. Report. Do you need anything from us, Frank? No other questions? We'll move on to the Branson Racetrack. Spencer, you're ready for your thing?
Yeah. Well, what we want to do is, and you guys have probably heard a little bit of talk about the racetrack, and what we want to do is take this opportunity to kind of present some information about the racetrack, and then two, some of the transportation components that will affect this advisory board. So kind of bring up to speed on that. So, I'm Spencer Jones with Great River Associates. I've got Tom Gammon, the Director of Business Development and Construction, and then Tom Carter.
Not very good assistant.
And then Tom Carter is our governmental liaison. Talk about the property is located at Highway 65 and Highway 86, and what the anchor of the facility would be is a 3/4 mile asphalt racetrack. The seating port is planned to be about 65,000 people. We're looking at about, as far as traffic volumes, we're looking at about 2.5 people per vehicle, so we're looking on the magnitude of about 25,000 parking spaces, or 25 vehicles moving in and out of the facility, just to kind of give you an impact on the traffic system that exists out there. The site will be constructed with the garage area and paddock area on the infield traditional track. If any of you are familiar with racetracks, this is modeled after the Richmond racetrack as far as 3/4 miles tracks go. Racing surface of about 55 feet wide, looking at multiple banking in the turns. Our goal there with the 3/4 mile track, and then two with the multiple banking curve, is to try to encourage more side-by-side racing, more excitement for the fans, you know, provide a good product out there so we get good reports and good venue for return visitors. And then some of the other components, it'll be 65,000 seat grandstands with luxury suites, as well as a press box for race operations, TV compound, and then a hospitality village for some of the track sponsors. And then vendors would set up in the midway where they typically sell like T-shirts and hats, those types of things. And then along the perimeter, we would also have our ADA parking, which would be the paved parking, and then also VIP parking. And then the majority of the rest of the site or parking would be facilitated with grass parking. So this kind of gives you a little bit of perspective of the overall site. Here's Highway 65, here's Highway 86. Our first phase of the project is this 800 acres. In addition to the 3/4 mile asphalt track, we're also talking about a 2.5 mile road course that would be built as a part of the facility as well. Again, a real strong focus on motorsports. We do have a second phase that we'll be looking at in the future. We're looking at it being more of an entertainment type venue, more of a recreational entertainment type venue, with the possibility of maybe some industrial development occurring in that future phase of the project. We're trying to take advantage of the airport that we have, the railroad that also exists and connects to the property in Highway 65. We think that the central location of the project in relation to the rest of the country, centered between the east and west coast, as well as having these three modes of transportation, will encourage industrial development and that recreational visitor component. One of the main emphasis for this, too, is to complement that existing Taney County grants and tourism market, trying to draw in a younger demographic and provide sustainability for the long term for the entire area. So we think this will be a huge anchor for
the whole area. What we believe about motorsports is that it adds a new dimension to entertainment for Taney County and the Tri-Lake, really the Tri-Lakes area. So you would have the lakes, you'd have the Silver Dollar City that attracts people to come to the area and the shows, and this would be another component that would make the area far more competitive in the overall tourist market. So with motorsports on on the road course, we were at a road course event in Barber Motorsports in Alabama, which is close to the Talladega track in April, and they had 89,000 people there on a 3-day event. We feel like that draw, and that's a little different crowd. Also, the road course would add a lot of sports car clubs. These guys own bets, and there's Corvette clubs, there's Mustang clubs, there's MG clubs, there's Ferrari clubs, and those guys would come in here, and the clubs would come and rent the track for days and stay in the area, so that the road course we see brings a little more affluent customer into the market. And then that's not to discount the Circle Track fans. And we've talked to several sanctioning bodies. We can't discuss specifics, but one of the open wheel bodies, we really thought they would want to race on the road course, and they said, "Oh no, we want to race on this. We want more Circle Tracks." And they were definitely very interested in coming in.
So to kind of continue along those lines, so motorsports are definitely a component of that. So we're talking about stock car racing, the open wheel racing. There'll be provisions for motocross, the BMX bicycles, go-kart racing, drift track racing, and then two, concerts.
If you look at this infield here, the supercross events could be held in that infield. That's when we do the really wild motocross work.
And then like the car shows and community events. And some of those community events, I guess one thing that I'm trying to address too with this is that with us talking about it being a motorsports facility, there are other components, the community events, concerts. We've talked to the Branson Airport about having the air show there. So we're looking at multiple opportunities for outreach into the community for different programs that don't exist today. So we're looking at motorsports events occurring about 50% of the time on the site. And then during the other 50%, motorsport type events. So with that, we're hoping to be in operations 200 to 250 days out of the year. One of the issues that we know we're dealing with an upcoming planning and zoning issue, is the noise concerns about it. So we're being very sensitive to that and want to make sure that our schedule is properly represented to the public. So I just wanted to take this opportunity to kind of present some of that information to you guys to address any of those misconceptions.
Spencer, how close is natural gas to this project?
Well, I think we're going to be back to College of the Ozarks, so we're going to be all the way back, you know, what, 8 miles?
Long way.
Yeah. But as we look at those industrial users, where we're trying to tie that into the race, or to the railroad and the highway, we think that we can find the users to help support that extension of the gas main to the property. And the thing about that is we're trying to provide a balance in the community for not just seasonal jobs, but year-round jobs. And we've spoken with several different industrial users, which are talking about the possibility of 24-hour operation and, you know, multiple shifts with some high-paying jobs that could go along with that. And we think that could be an asset for the community. Stabilize that, you know, the vacation or visitor component, you know, where we kind of shut down during certain times of the year. And, you know, with Taney County having such a high unemployment rate, you know, that's definitely a need that needs to be assessed and addressed by the community.
Rick, how far does the city of Dennisville say?
Just the rock quarry, just in Jernigan's 165, in that particular area. Now, on the other side of the highway, we go down to 265, roughly. So I have talked with the natural gas people. They have started construction in Hollister. They are working behind Lowe's. They've come across, and they're going down through there. But it's still going to be 6 miles. Now, I've talked with them, and they said if there's users down there that can make it pencil, then we'll go down there.
So, as far as other public infrastructure, I mean, we're working with the city of Hollister and the Taney County Regional Sewer District about extending the trunk sewer down Turkey Creek to help us deal with our waste collection system. And that provides additional opportunities, you know, up that Turkey Creek draw. And then we'll be looking at water. That'll be dealt with on-site with wells and a storage tower. So we'll have a small little water distribution system there on-site to deal with the development.
A little more than small.
One of the other things we have is, of course, the fire district doesn't have central water supply down there even to refill tankers. They got to draft out of lakes and all that stuff. If they can get places where they can hook onto hydrants, that's a life safety issue down in that area. So that would help the area residents that don't have that advantage right now. So that's another thing.
Well, maybe to hit on that, on the public safety component.
One of the things we're doing and having our program is a public safety building. We didn't bring that board, but what our intent is, and we've got meetings Wednesday, we'll do a public safety building on the property. Anytime the tracks are live, we have to have rescue, fire rescue, and ambulance on the track. So we're going to have people there all the time, anytime we're running. So. Of course, we pay for that. It's not something we're asking any other organization to pay for. It's part of the cost of operating the racetrack. But it makes good synergy that we build a public safety building on the property. We'll have at least two ambulance bays, at least two fire department bays, and we're looking at a traffic management center, a couple of pods, essentially, not a full traffic management building, but putting a couple of traffic management pods in and then tying all the way back down to the bridge with cameras and fiber. So as we do our traffic infrastructure or transportation infrastructure development, all of the traffic in and out of our facility can be managed from that location by MoDOT and Highway Patrol or in the large events, so they can actually watch the flow in and out. And we have been to the Kansas track at the invitation of KDOT and the Kansas Highway Patrol and spent the day watching those guys manage their traffic in that facility and out of that facility. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you from having visited several racetracks around the country, and there's a few tracks I haven't been to, but I've been to most of them, and there's that facility pushes traffic in and out of there better than almost anybody.
I've been to meetings where those guys from the Kansas DOT have presented, and it's pretty amazing. How does this compare? Because that's the thing, a small army controlling that traffic.
Actually, you know, they had 30 highway patrolmen and 20 KDOT employees, and they manage the inflow and the outflow with that group of people, that the captain of that patrol district, we sat in the room with him, and he really was the one making the calls, and there was a major that, in there for a little while, and he really was just kind of checking, and they said the first race, the colonel, their top officer of the state was there, and since then they haven't done it, but he is able to say, move this, and the KDOT guys go change the cones, and the officers make the change. And it's pretty amazing, but it's because of the camera system, and it's real-time cameras.
Is it the same size as seating, the 65,000, or is that?
They're quite a bit larger. They'll hold about 100,000.
They got I-70 there.
They got 70 and 435. So
a lot of irons.
Yeah. That was a big factor on them selecting that location. But I can tell you that those are not the factors. The factors really occur on property and as you exit property. It hasn't been 70 and 435. It's been those facilities. So in looking at how we're going to address that, when MoDOT 4 lane back from Hollister to end of the Arkansas line, the original intentions were an interchange at 265, an interchange at 86, and an overpass down by the Arkansas line. And so due to funding limitations, signals were put in at 265 and 86. And now due to safety issues, they're evaluating the signal down near the state line. So what we're doing is we're in conversations with MoDOT, working out a memorandum of understanding to say, we want to partner together on this. And we understand that funding is limited, but we have allocated transportation infrastructure costs into our project. And what we want to do is cost share with MoDOT to help reimburse us for those upfront construction costs. And that's the discussions that we're having with them now to work out those details. So what we're proposing is to build a new interchange at 265, a new interchange at 86, and then at the state line to also build an interchange. The original plan was for just an overpass, but we'd like to go ahead and put the ramps on that to make that full.
And it connects the outer road between all three. So yeah. You think from a traffic management, we can peel northbound traffic out off of 65 and load them on this outer road on the inbound, and we can peel traffic off here and load them on the outer road southbound and bring westbound traffic into the site.
So
and then as you leave, you reverse that flow, essentially.
So the thing about it is, you're really all about lane capacity. So you want to get as many lanes going in the primary direction that you're trying to. So we may have a three-lane road section with improved shoulders. So in that scenario, we would utilize those shoulders as a lane and have four coming in during the inbound traffic and one going out so we can maintain that dedicated exit. And then on the exit maneuver, we would reverse that and do four out, one in, just so we can maintain flow each direction. Our goal is to try to move people in and out of the facility in about a 2.5 to 3 hour window. And the exit is our driver, because once the race is over, they're all running to their cars.
One out in 2 hours. That's the goal. All of them that won out in 2 hours. And there are some that would hang around and some that
take it off.
Yeah. One of the other critical pieces is this connector road that would come through our property and connect over to the airport road that would get us the airport. Then it would have two points of access. Last spring, down here on Grants Creek Boulevard, Russ went down and cleaned up a mudslide that was just within probably 2 or 3 hours of closing that road. And we see that as a big advantage for the airport, plus for the neighbors, where the Fruit Farm Road people could connect back to this road. They didn't have a back way out. And there's better access to these neighborhoods down here from that road than there currently is. You guys probably know more about Blue Ridge than any of us want to. But.
So again, there's the two situations there. That's a dead end road. I mean, there's only one way in, one way out for Fruit Farm and Blue Ridge, and one way in, one way out for the airport. And so this would provide an alternate way out for both. And this was really driven by we've had some neighborhood meetings, and that was driven by a concern that the neighborhoods have had. So trying to be a listen and be attentive to their needs. So again, our plan is to partner with MoDOT, do a cost share to get reimbursed for some of those costs. Another important component is that we're going to be asking the county about the possibility of doing a transportation development district, utilizing some of the sales tax base that are generated from the facility to help pay back some of those public infrastructure costs.
That's not dipping into any current funds. It would be an additional tax into the district.
And it just put within the bounds of that transportation development district. And again, just a sales tax, no property tax. Our goal is to protect and preserve those entities that collect and operate on those property tax values. And we know how important that is in school districts and those other folks. But that's another request that we'll be making to help fund these infrastructure projects. And actually not fund, but reimburse. We're going to upfront the cost. So that's kind of just a good general overview where we're at in the process. We meet with planning and zoning on July the 11th, where we have our public hearing. We're hoping that we'll have a favorable result from them, which will be 1 week after that, and then we'll start moving on our planned schedule. We're looking at vertical construction to start coming out of the ground towards the end of this year. We have still tentatively set our opening date to be spring of 2013.
And but we're like MoDOT. Spring, I guess. All the way to June the 21st, right?
So we'd be happy to answer any questions that you guys may have. And we would like the opportunity to kind of continue to keep you guys up to speed on how we're progressing with both our agreements with MoDOT. As we start looking at this airport access road and any other issues that you guys see.
We would see the bulk of the airport road as a dedicated county road in the long range view. The one thing is on race weekends, on the big race weekends where we would have a real large crowd, we would have to limit access on that road because on the inflow and outflow, it'll be full.
What kind of price are you going to be charging for tickets?
Well, it would vary on the event. There's different price points per series. ARCA series is going to bring a lower price than a nationwide series race.
So totally they range 20 to 70 bucks.
Yeah.
20 to 70?
Yeah, depending on the sanctioning body or who's racing on it. Just ballpark.
So it might be as low as 15.
Impact is Highway 65. It's race day, it's Highway 65. So what's the impact on 65 going to be?
65, right now 65 has about 18,000 vehicles per day on it. We're talking about adding, it's got a capacity. With the traffic signals in, it's got one capacity. When you put the interchanges in, it has additional capacity. But with the with the signals there, you're probably 30,000-40,000 vehicles per day. So when we add our 20-25 vehicles or 1,000 vehicles, there's going to be some congestion occur. But again, we're going to block that out for a shorter duration.
If you add the diamonds in, right now it's at 33,000 cars a day would be capacity on it. If you add the diamonds in, it goes to 70,000.
Just keeping that free flow movement is important so they're not stopping. With the lights in, you're going to create a ton of congestion. But I can tell you on race days, everything changes because the Highway Patrol and MoDOT will get out there and manage that traffic to try to keep it moving as efficiently as possible.
Some lane or shoulder improvements, and this is all real preliminary, but we've talked about lane and shoulder improvements on 65 to carry some of the extra load and leave the through lanes open.
I actually went down with Kirk Duranis and we talked about actually leaving lanes straight through. The race doesn't even affect the lanes. They're on different lanes and there's through traffic. And the other thing was with, let's say you're doing 30,000 cars a day as a result of the race. Right now in the Hollister interchange, we have 33,000 cars a day. That's what goes through the interchange on a daily average. We have, on a heavy day, we have 56,000 in there. Well, nobody even thinks of that. Now, they're in a more congested period of time, but everybody is kind of worried about the sky falling, but I'm not so sure that that's really the case, because we're doing that kind of stuff now and nobody even considers it. It's just like another day. The day that we tested the interchange to make sure that it really was a 60,000 car a day interchange, when they closed the bridge for a couple of days, they closed the downtown bridge there, and we put everybody 60,000 cars a day through the interchange. Now, that was a little bit of a challenge. But there's no math that makes 60,000 cars a day go through any of this stuff. Well, before everybody starts wringing their hands and throwing it up in the air, know that we're doing this thing every single day now, and it just doesn't seem to be anything other than another day.
The other addition is that with the outer road, you can use that as stacking distance or moving parking lot and peel quite a few people off of, across 165 and 265. Quite a few people will go across 86 and go back into Kimberly City and that way across 86 and up 13. And the Arkansas traffic will typically come out of the south and head south. So,
but we're looking at a heavy, we recognize heavy distribution going north, outbound, and the south, and down. I mean, we know that. But again, going back to Rick's example, I mean, you're talking about if we were trying to put 60,000 vehicles through one interchange, we've got three of them, and our goal is to distribute them to that 65 corridor so that then we can handle, closer to the 70,000 vehicles per day.
Our goal is so once you get in your car and start moving in the traffic line, that we keep you moving. You may only be doing 2 or 3 miles an hour, but you're moving. And as we pull them out and then load them onto 65, then we can control the flow out.
Now, right now, too, how many of these 22 to 25,000 race days are there in a year?
There would probably be about four max.
Okay, so there's four of those. The other 361 days a year, those intersections are sitting there serving all of our residents now. And I will tell you, because it's in my district, but I see it every day, that interchange at Branson Creek, or that road at grade road access at Branson Creek in the airport, is a dangerous place. It's an ugly place. We get these in an alternate way around, that's going to be a lot safer for our day-to-day stuff. Plus, coming out on 265 at 86 and just going through an interchange rather than having to sit at a stoplight.
Actually, if you're coming out 65 to go to the airport, it's going to be far quicker to go right past that and come up here and go in than it is to come through here.
And far safer.
Yep.
So again, and that right now this outer road is discontinuous. It just runs a little ways and it stops, and it runs a little ways and it stops. We'll connect that all the way through as a part of this project. We need that capacity to move them, to distribute them out to those interchanges.
And load at multiple points. That's part of the trick. I mean, some of 65 will load up here. But if you load at multiple points, you can flow more traffic in the same time period than you can try to choke it into one.
Okay, so the real interest in us is why to work this out, why to put this burden on us, is because the only way we're going to be successful is moving people in and out. I mean, we can have a great race and a great event, but if they're sitting in traffic for 3 or 4 hours and not moving, they're never coming back. So we know we got to get them in efficiently and have a good event for them, and then get them back home efficiently and safely. So we're going to be out of business.
4th of July race in Daytona, and with my wife and granddaughter and another family, and it's a night race. And we got in the car at 11:30 Eastern time, and at 3:30 in the morning, we were on I-4 heading back home. So I can tell you, we won't ever go back to that race. Now, I've been back after that to the 500, but I knew another way to get in and out, and I came that way.
You know, a lot of the problem on something like this, the traffic slowdown, is they had it in Kansas City, is people who are in the wrong lane, you know, they're going to want to exit, so they slow down, stop everybody behind them with their turn signal on to be able to get off. But, you know, they solved that in a lot of places where they put up these barriers where if you're in the wrong lane, you're in the wrong lane, and they do it way back. So you can't switch.
Right.
And that, you know, that would have, that, if they'd have done that years ago, it would save a ton of money on all these new intersections, because most of the traffic rush time slowdown was, you know, was just people in the wrong lane.
Yep. Well, and that was one thing that we noticed that there at the Kansas races, cones and barriers and message boards.
Right.
Can't have enough of.
Can't have enough, see.
Because you can respond quickly, and that's what they were doing. They're like,
right,
put more cones out or move the cones, right, or put a barricade up. Mm-hmm. And adjust their plan. I mean, and that was the thing. They were moving them from this interchange. They're saying, all right, close that interchange, move them to this interchange, let us catch back up, and then right, once they're caught up, open it back up, and then it'll start free-flowing again.
Yeah.
We about experienced that on the roundabout with the bridge down there where they're patching that that north approach. I mean, it almost gridlocked and just stopped the whole roundabout, and then everybody's looking at each other. So, but then they move traffic, they got them moving around, and everything starts flowing again.
One of the concerns that has been voiced at some of the things is the idea about the congestion as it moves back north, whether it's going to block 76, 248, whether it blocks all that. But as they can switch these reader boards, they can take Branson traffic across 248 and out across the bridge to a certain degree. Then when that gets full or when that's getting congested, they see that on cameras and they switch the reader boards or they switch the cones and they redirect traffic, so that they can distribute traffic more evenly through all of these different routes. And that's what that traffic control center, Frank, you've got one in Springfield, right? How's that work?
Well, it's very neat, but it's basically they have cameras and ways to change signal plans. They can't, you know, look at it and press the button and make the signal go red or green, but they can monitor the plans and make adjustments to it. They're also able to see things like a crash. They can let 911 know pretty quickly if they see the crash happen at those intersections. You can go on the web and see the same cameras they look at. But it's going to let them see what's happening out there right now and then they can make adjustments. This is a little different because it's also got a little bit of incident response to that. They go out and change cones or whatever to fix whatever traffic problem they're having. And we'll have, you know, law enforcement out there also acting like a live signal. They can change it more on the fly than a regular traffic signal can.
It's a good deal as long as they'll man it. If they have the budget cutbacks and then they don't supply the people.
And hey, I'll tell you, I mean, that was an issue that Kansas was dealing with. Although they manage it very efficiently with the staff level that they have, but that was a concern. Sure. And that's a concern, and not just as far as a raceway, whether it's KU basketball or a Kansas right. City Chiefs football exactly. game or any of those
things. Yeah, exactly. With the Big 12 tournaments up there, they have the same problem.
Yeah.
And again,
that's on the Missouri side. But they still, and the choke point for Kansas is I-70. Mm-hmm. It seemed it choked up on the inbound and choked up on the outbound.
But I mean, you were there. How long did it take you to get out of there?
30 minutes.
I mean, they
an hour after the race, and I was on 71 headed south in 30 minutes.
But the economic engine that the Kansas Raceway is created for Kansas and Wyandotte County last year created $41 million in state local sales tax. So they see the economic jewel that is, and they're keeping it waxed.
So they built all the stores and everything out there, Cabela's.
Yeah, there's some things out there.
That brought all that. See, they didn't have any of that. That was
Nebraska Furniture Mart.
Yeah, that
was the dev out there. 4,500, a building for 4,500 employees out
right.
there.
Nice. Yeah. The new soccer facility is state-of-the-art right. if you get a chance to go up and see that. It's worth just looking at the facility.
You guys have any other questions for us? Or?
Thank you. That was good information.
Thank you. Well, we'd like the opportunity to present in front of you periodically just to kind of let you know the status of the project.
Come on.
Okay. That sounds good.
We appreciate it.
I think after our P&Z vote, you could probably expect us back in the 30 days after that with some more specific information.
Okay. That'd be great.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it. We appreciate it. Really good.
Now, I've got a question to the board, and it's a little preliminary, but it gets back to what we talked about earlier, and that is the idea about how to prioritize some of this stuff. Again, in District 1, you see two projects that are on the tip that are not on, on priorities, and that's Business 65 and then T Highway, because I already knew that they were in the system and everything else, but should we be, should I be trying to put these into our set of priorities? And leave off some of the lower ones? Mm-hmm.
We said we'd make changes.
Okay, so I just, I'll submit a new series of priorities here. Sure. Now, I think it's prudent to wait until we get through T and Z before we roll these interchanges in, but once we do that, then expect for me to submit.
Well, your list can go from 7 to maybe 20.
Well,
move some down.
Do you want three interchanges as individual
yep.
priorities?
Yep.
Or do you, okay, all right, you want the road to the airport as an individual priority, or you want outer roads? How do you want to do this?
Individual.
All right.
If I can interject one comment on that, I can tell you how we're looking at it, that the three interchanges are single projects, the outer roads connections are single projects, and the road to the airport is single projects. That's what we... Frank, I think you guys are looking at the same way we were.
Yeah, we've asked for a traffic study to kind of look at what needs to be done when, so we can, number one, make sure that we understand the traffic impacts of the project and see what's really necessary to be done. Get them up from there.
As far as putting these on your list, they're not really a priority until the racetrack's built. I'm assuming as far as when we sit down and try to analyze traffic, there's no traffic there.
No.
So, I mean, do they become priority on your matrix until the track's there, and then the track will be there until they're already built, or how, getting at having future projections, if that interchange isn't there, that's probably number one priority, that's for right now, which is not necessarily the point.
I think you've got to have infrastructure before you have anything else.
If we wait till the track's there and then prioritize the interchanges, it's a little too late.
We just lost the whole opportunity here.
No, I agree. The interchanges need to be there first.
Sure. After the P&Z vote, you'll expect for District 1 to submit a new set of priorities for District 1. So that's what I'm telling you.
Because before we turn dirt, we have to have approval from P&Z and our agreement at MoDOT or we go away.
Yeah.
But is that a county priority, or is that all going to be developed? I guess my question is that something...
These are projects that were previously identified by MoDOT as public priorities. Just funding limited from happening.
And that's why I went through Missouri House 141-3 and Missouri Senate 33-0.
But I guess my point, too, is sometimes we have things that are on priority lists here that are not... The priority lists aren't necessarily saying that the county has to spend its funds that way. Because, the interchange in Hollister's got Hollister funds in it. Branson's project's got some Branson funds in it. We're not just asking the county just because it's a high priority. That just means that we'd like to pull together and agree that in this area, these are the high priority projects. Now, where we're going to get money, we may have to, like this bridge, I can see right now that I'm going to wind up involved with that some dang way or another, getting some federal dollars, and I think I might have a meeting tomorrow that we're going to start getting that on the dang scope. But if it isn't a priority to the county to look out for this bridge, then they're all going to look at us and say, well, the county doesn't think it's a priority, so why would we give you any money?
Do we put in projections then as far as the traffic count on this?
Yes.
Yeah, we're doing a traffic study.
Yep.
Down to new or old business. I'm not aware of any new or old. Touched on it already. We got a spot for public comment. We don't have any public comments, so any other business today?
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you.